Oh, okay. So, Rabosai, I'll be honest with you, I didn't get a chance to investigate whether or not we've ever discussed this topic in the past. But let me introduce the topic, and if it sounds Mazel Tov, thank you. If it sounds familiar to you, then we probably discussed it in the past, but Chazar is always a good thing. And the question is, in a broader sense, the question really is the relationship between Torah Shebichtav and Chazal. And you know, we live in a generation where it seems that even in so-called Orthodox circles, you know, Chazal come under fire. You know, they it doesn't fit into the Psukim, and therefore they reject it outright. But truth is that those people are not part of the Masoret HaTorah, and they were not raised in the tradition of the Beis Medrash, and they have all sorts of new innovations and different kinds of movements, and they just try to undermine Chazal. They fit into the category of what I call Megala Ponim Shalok HaAlocha. So they say, well, all these statements in Chazal about you know, the various greats, that the Tanakh was very clear and open about their sins, like Reuven, it says in the pasuk, you know, Vayishkav is Bilhah, so certainly he slept with Bilhah, and Bnei Eli, it says V'yeis Asher Yishkav Unes HaNoshim, as if to say they slept with married women, and so forth and so on. And then, for example, when it comes to David HaMelech and Bathsheba, they're not willing to accept Chazal, who claim, as we'll soon see in the Gemara in Shabbos, that Kol Misha Omer David HaMelech Chata, meaning that he was in violation of Eishes Ish, Eino El Torah. And instead they take the pasuk in Shmuel Beis very literally, Nosan HaNovi comes to give castigation and to rebuke David, and he says, Bazisas Tvar Hashem, Lassos HaRabieno. And it goes on and on. In this week's parsha, we're going to have the story of the great love of Yitzchak for Esav, in which Yitzchak wants to give and bestow all the brachos on Esav. And the reason for that is because Vayev Yitzchak es Esav kitzayet b'fiv, and they take this literally kipshuto, they're not willing to open themselves up to Chazal, and how Chazal described the different roles, respectively, of Yaakov and Esav, and why Yitzchak wanted to bestow the brachos on Dafkan Esav. This goes on to Shlomo HaMelech and many, many others, as we'll soon see as we go along. And we have a long sugya in Masechta Shabbos, and that Gemara, which is at the first page of the Maror Mekomos here, page Nun Hey Amin Beis, goes on to Nun Vav Amin Aleph. It's a very long sugya, and what's common to this sugya is that Eino El Torah. Eino El Torah. That's what I would call, you know, I've had to give a name or a label to this sugya, it's Eino El Torah. Whoever takes the Gemara seriously, the Pasuk seriously, and says that Reuven was a Chote, the Maisa Bilhah is a Torah, the Bnei Eli is a Torah, the David HaMelech is a Torah, and it goes on. So we have a problem here, because we do believe in Torah Shebichtav, Ein Mikra Yotzev De Pshuto. In fact, a tremendous scholar that I knew very well, I worked for him for 5 years, his name was Rav Kuperman, he passed away recently, he writes a two-volume magnum opus, this gigantic work called Kedushas Pshuto Shel Mikra. But again, his purpose is to show you how Chazal give you a new perspective on Pshuto Shel Mikra. And the Pshuto Shel Mikra, when you see it through the eyes or the lens of Chazal, you see it totally differently. And in this particular presentation from the Olamot organization, which is located, you know, its headquarters is in LA, in California, and that's the site which was created and is funded by Rav Tzvi Reisman, and he should be zocher to many mitzvahs. So in this presentation, he doesn't quote Rav Kuperman, who works very hard to understand Pshuto Shel Mikra, but rather he quotes a very long essay from Rav Avigdor Nevensal, who's the Rav of the old city of Yerushalayim. And this essay by Rav Nevensal is printed here on page 11. And basically, what Rav Nevensal tries to present is the rules and regulations by which we should learn the Torah, learn the Pshuto Shel Mikra in the Torah itself, the written word. And basically, if I can, again, I'm sort of summarizing a much more complicated and long presentation. His thesis is that in order to read a pasuk and understand it properly, you have to know all of Tanakh. You can never isolate one pasuk and just read it and pirush hamilos and come to certain conclusions about what the Torah has in mind. And therefore, what, let's say, in just to give one example, the case of Reuven, if you want to see who Reuven was, you want to get a glimpse of his personality and his identity, you have to learn all of Tanakh. And basically, Rav Nevensal teaches us and proves to us that if you take a broader perspective of Tanakh, you'll begin to appreciate the greatness of Reuven. And there are many psukim that are not written in our parshios here in Sefer Bereishis about Reuven that have to be taken under advisement. And when you begin to see the greatness of Reuven and appreciate who he was, then you'll understand how Chazal used the word Vayishkav to identify or describe the sin of Reuven. And it says Vayishkav is Bilhah. And this is going to be true for the Bnei Eli and for David HaMelech and for Shlomo HaMelech and so forth and so on. Now, before we get into the nitty-gritty details of Rav Nevensal's presentation, we want to point out that this distinction between what we call Havanas HaMilim, meaning reading just words, Kishaliatzman, as opposed to Pirush HaMilos BeHeksheron, by understanding them in their context. And again, the context is the broader context of that parasha and that story, or it could be the broader context of all of Tanakh, because as Rav Nevensal points out, Chayom L'Rosa Tanakh Kulo, you have to see the entire Tanakh, that's the book of Torah Shebichsav, and you can't just isolate a piece and read the Pirush HaMilim and come to some conclusion. And then, in a broader perspective on this topic, about how to, again, see and understand the Pesukim in Tanakh through the lens of Chazal, you have to realize something else. That the Gemara tells us in Masechet Shabbos, not here in this sugya in the fifth perek, on Daf Nun Hei, but rather later on, towards the end of Shabbos, on Daf Kuf Yud Beis Amud Beis, the Gemara says that we see things from the perspective of our generation, which is called in the language of the Gemara, Doros Achronim, but sometimes we fail to appreciate what's called the Doros Harishonim. And in describing the difference, the gap between the Doros Achronim, our generation, and the Doros Harishonim, the Gemara says the following, Im Rishonim B'nei Malachim, if you were to compare the earlier generations to angels, Anu B'nei Anoshim, we are born of human flesh. V'im HaRishonim B'nei Anoshim, if you want to identify the Rishonim as human beings, in that sense, so Anu Kechamorim, we don't even rate as being human beings. And the Gemara goes on to dramatize this. Don't think that when we compare the Achronim, the Doros Achronim, to a Chamar, we're referring to the Chamar of Rav Pinchas ben Yoyer. The Gemara tells in Chulin that Chamar would not even eat from Dman, but rather Kishar Chamorim. And this is all explicit in the Gemara. So if you Baruch Hashem are part of the Mesoros HaTorah, you believe in Torah, in Torah Min HaShamayim, and that means that God gave two Torahs, the Torah Shebichsav and the Torah Shebaalpeh, This is Torah Shebaal Peh. This is from the Chachmei HaMesora. And the Rav used to always say over in the name of his father that why does the Rambam count in his introduction to his magnum opus Mishneh Torah, why does he count 40 generations from Moshe Rabbeinu all the way to Ravina Rav Ashi? So Rav Moshe Soloveitchik used to say because those are the Baalei HaMesora. They established the halacha, and any time because it was at the time of Ravina Rav Ashi that they closed the Gemara, the Chasivas at Talmud. Anything in the Talmud when it says Hilchasah, that doesn't lend itself to any debate. You know, you can debate the interpretations and issues that come up through the Tekufa of the Gaonim, the Rishonim, and then the Achronim, and perspectives and so. But you can't question the Baalei HaMesora. And that's in the Gemara itself. So the Baalei HaMesora, who have a special status in Halacha, they tell us that we don't compare to the Rishonim. Now, to demonstrate this in a very profound way, we're going to talk a little bit about the Vilna Gaon. Just to use an example, who was the Vilna Gaon? So Reb Chaim Volozhin was the outstanding disciple. He once asked the Vilna Gaon if he would be a Tana had he lived at the time of the Tanoim. He said that even if I lived 1,000 times 1,000 years, I wouldn't be fit to reach the ankle of the Tanoim. And then Reb Chaim Volozhin, I don't know how he had the chutzpah to do this. He said, maybe you'd be on the level of a Rishon. So at that point, the Gaon back down, he says, Ulai Karamban. Because Reb Chaim Volozhin thought that maybe the Gaon, his Rebbe, was like the Ramban. No, Ulai Karamban. By the way, the Ramban is not bad either. That's pretty good company. Again, if you learn Ramban, you begin to get a taste of his godless. And the Gaon was saying about himself, and the Gaon probably knew Shas when he was 6 years old, Ulai Karamban. So you begin to get a perspective of generations as they go on, and the Tanoim and the Amoraim speak about the Tanoim as if they were giants, and we didn't reach their ankles. And then again, that's the Amora. And then you say about the Gaon, that if I lived so many and so many millennia, I would not be fit to shine the shoes of a Tana and Amora. You begin to get a perspective here that's a much broader perspective. You know, we're looking at the Rishonei HaRishonim, you know, those who are recorded in Tanakh, as if we can see them from the perspective of our lens, of our Doros HaAchronim, and it's a totally different perspective. So this is the concept called Yiridas HaDoros, that we cannot really judge based on our generation. And if you take a look on page 3 here of the Ma'ar Makomos, you'll see a sefer called Shalei Das. I'm sorry, Shiurei Das. And this was authored by the Telzer Rosh Hashiv Rabbi Yosef Yehuda Leib Bloch in the city of Telz about, I would say, 100 years ago, maybe less. Shiurei Das. And it's very fascinating because in Telz, I'm not sure if the Derech HaLimud for Shas necessarily became widely accepted, but their analysis of Agadata and their deep intellect in analyzing concepts which we call Machshava or Hashkafa, they reign supreme, because the Telzer Rosh Yeshiva was so profound in their thinking. And in this particular presentation of Shiurei Das, which you'll see on page 3, he speaks about the Vilna Gaon. And he goes on to say, after, again, whatever we summarized, he says in Maskota, Halo Dover Zehu, Dover She'efshal Ahamin Bo Yitzar Zebesich Lenu. He says, you know, we're not talking about something magical that belongs to ancient history. We're talking about the Vilna Gaon and Reb Chaim Volozhin. I mean, these are personalities that have impact on our day, because Volozhin Yeshiva is really the mother of all yeshivas that we have today in the Lithuanian camp. And he says that when we're talking about a person on the level of the Vilna Gaon, if we get a picture of him, he says, You can't judge him by your standards. He gives a mashal. He speaks about a very simple person who's simplistic, he has no great intellect, and compare him to the great philosopher, or one of the giants, or the geniuses of that generation. And he says, Hayim Eshel Olakushi, okay, this is a little bit of a racial statement, okay, but anyway, Hayim Eshel Olahasigis Hanyonim Hachayim Be'ish Haburo Mazeh Ubinyonim Oso. Can you really expect that this simpleton would be able to have a deep and profound perspective on someone who's Muram, who is the greatest of that generation and maybe of many generations? And here it is today, we are katnei amochos, we have limited kinds of abilities of intellect. Can we be expected to understand the greatness of the Rishonim, or for that matter, the members of Tanakh, meaning the persona that played such a role in Tanakh in informing the Jewish nation? Hello, ish shechai kimak bedorenu, here's the Vilna Gaon. And he's almost alive in our generation. His Talmidim and Talmidei Talmidim are alive. We follow his Minhagim. Ubechalzo, nevertheless, the God of Halashon said that there's no way, in the name of the God, there's no way you can compare me to an Amora, even if I were to live a thousand times the lifespan that I'm going to live. He says, I can't even reach the, you know, as we said before, the ankles, the karsulim of the Amora, of an Amora. So how can we really get a picture, a clear vision of the stature and the greatness of a person who goes back to the time of Tanakh? I think I once mentioned a famous medrash in the name of Rabbi Yitzchak. Thank you. The medrash appears in a few places. One of them is coming up actually next Shabbos in the Kriya, not this Shabbos, the one after, about Reuven, Aaron, and Boaz. Do you remember this? And in each case, they were faulted because Reuven could have saved Yosef. He could have literally taken Yosef on his piggyback, you know, and taking him back to Yaakov. Or, for example, Aaron, when he came out to greet Moshe, it doesn't say that he came out with a seven-piece band, you know, betupim and mecholos. And in the case of Boaz, when he was feeding Rus in the Sada, in the fields there, it says that he gave a little koli v'karmel, you know, he gave some sort of brand cereal. Why didn't he bring out, you know, a seven-course meal with steaks and, you know, a chef and so forth. So the medrash to the name of Yitzchak over and over again says, Ilu hoya yodea. Now, if only Reuven knew that his actions were being recorded in Tanakh, or if only Aaron knew that his simcha at the appointment of his brother Moshe as the leader of Israel was being recorded in Tanakh, this is what he would have done, you know, or should have done, could have done. Or in the case of Boaz. Meaning these are personalities who were unaware of the fact that their actions and their behavior is being recorded in Lenetzach Nitzachim in the Torah. So I heard once from Rav David Fuchs, Shlita, and he said, well, what's going on in the Ilu HaYodea? What's Ilu HaYodea? People of the stature of a Reuven or an Aaron or a Boaz, they don't do things because it's going to be recorded. You know, that's not really the way we observe and fulfill the Torah. It's not that, well, we want to be, you know, splashed on the front cover of the Toronto Times. I don't know if there's such a paper, but Toronto Daily. What's it called there? I never got a newspaper when it's
Globe and Mail.
What?
Globe and Mail.
Globe?
Globe and Mail.
Okay, whatever it is. I couldn't hear it, but Globe and Mail, or Mail and Globe, or Globe and Female. Whatever it might be. You know, that's not why you do great deeds. You know, you do great deeds because, you know, you're a servant of Hashem. Shalom and Astakal Pras. So what's this all about? Ilu HaYodea. And Rav Fuchs explained that we have to reinterpret Rav Yitzchak's words of Ilu HaYodea. It means Tanakh itself is meant to record those events that could bring about a major change in the history of Klal Yisrael. Right? The Torah itself is the same as Knesset Yisrael. So the Ilu HaYodea means that Reuven didn't realize the great significance of his action in terms of the possibility of saving Klal Yisrael. Chazal say that had Yosef been killed and there would have been left with 11 brothers, then there would be no deal. It was 12 or bust. In the case of Aaron, Moshe had to be appointed as Moshe and Shal Yisrael. And what's at stake here is that if Aaron is jealous of Moshe, then Moshe is going to have to give up on that appointment, and that's kaput for Klal Yisrael. We'd still be in Mitzrayim today. And in the case of Boaz, what did he know? Did he realize that Ruth is going to be the mother of Mashiach? That the Geula of Klal Yisrael is at stake? So we see clearly that the Tanakh is recording, you know, and forming the stories in Tanakh are forming the history and the makeup of Klal Yisrael. That's what we call myself a Simul and Bonin. Obviously, Tanakh is going to present us the Gedolim, the greats, who form and bring about the ultimate Geula of Klal Yisrael. So we're talking about, you know, something absolutely, absolutely great. Now, at this point, what I'd like to do is take a look at the insights of Rav Breuder, the Son Derech. We've mentioned him numerous times, and this appears on pages 9 and 10. By the way, Rav Olsen, is any of this sounding familiar? Did we ever discuss this?
No,
we never did. Okay, so then I'm not going to regret that we chose this topic, which I chose about 2 a.m. last night, or maybe later. Now, it's interesting to see how almost all the source material that he collected here, tremendous, 15 pages of Makoros, of Mar Makomos, they're almost all from the Lithuanian yeshivas. And my take on that is that the Rosh Yeshiva in Lita were being faced with this problem, because maybe the women back in Lita were not exposed to an education of Chazal, but they knew Tanakh. And that's a dangerous thing, because if you read Tanakh and you think you're understanding Tanakh because of Pshuto Shel Mikra, you may really, really, go off the derech. So, for example, in this collection, he has Rav Rudiman, the Rosh Hashiva of Nei Sol of Baltimore, in this case, not Toronto. He has Rav Elio Dessler, who was one of the primary personalities in the yeshivas here in England, in Europe, in Manchester, and so forth. He's got Rav Aaron Kotler, and he has Rav Breuder, Rav Simcha Zissel Breuder, the Rosh Hashiva of Hebron Yeshiva. And I don't think it's a coincidence. Meaning, I don't think in the Hasidic Sfarim, as great as they are, you'll find this topic. It's like not even an issue. Because even if their mothers and daughters learn Tanakh from Tzenorena itself is based on Chazal. You know, it's like learning Chumash with Rashi. But in Lita, back in the day, and today it's true in America, there are people learning Tanakh from a perspective of Pshuto Shel Mikra, without the eye of Chazal. And the Rosh Yeshiva have to address this. So, for example, he has here a piece we mentioned before from the Rosh Yeshiva of Tells, but also from the Rosh Yeshiva of Neri Sol Baltimore, who I had the pleasure of meeting back in my youth. And Rav Rudiman says that the Yesod is Shekol Musoge HaTorah Nitzchis Nikvu B'tzuros Shall Azharas Vitzivuyim Hano Adim Li Alfe Doros Uli Ein Sof Zman. He says that because the purpose of the Torah is to include within it all sorts of ideas and mitzvos that are eternal in nature, Tzrichim Lichol B'tochav Eskol Ofanim V'Oros Hefsharios, then by definition you have to include within the words of the Torah all possible scenarios and all possible decisions. Lachen, therefore, also Loshon HaKolelis Bituyim Zeim L'masim HaNimdodim Dar Lefi Erko V'chol Odom Lefi Madrigoso. He says that therefore, since the Torah has to use terminology that could apply and describe in an absolute eternal way, endless time, so what words can the Torah use? It has to use words that even the Doros Hachronim could understand, even though in the context of the Doros Hachronim they mean something totally different. He says, "Lo roi ritzicha v'niyuf hamur biyachas l'doros rishonim, ki roi ritzicha v'niyuf hamurim biyachas l'doros achronim." Does the Torah might actually employ the word ritzicha or niyuf in a way that, if you took it literally, it would mean just that? You know, we're talking about cardinal sins over here, not ein kleinikai. And the reason why the Torah has to use these terms is because these terms can be understood throughout the generations. If the Torah had used different words to describe the events that took place in Tanakh, we would be totally thrown for a loop. We would miss the point. And therefore he says the following, that there's something called Avizrayim. Or let's take a minute of time, so we'll appreciate Rav Rudiman's chiddush here. Avizrayim means something that has the smell, so to speak, I mean that figuratively, of the original criminal act that you're talking about. Like, for example, you can violate Avodah Zarah in Avizrayim Avodah Zarah by selling Christmas trees to a Christian. I don't know. I mean, you have to check that out. I'm sure Rabbi Tachino will give a shiur on that this year. Or, for example, there are certain cases where the Gemara says that for a man to go me'achori apargon and speak to a married woman in a certain way with a certain intimacy, that's called avizrayu de gili arayos. Or for a man to stand by idly while someone else is being murdered, that omission of action could be classified as Avizrayim D'Ritzicha. In other words, there's the law itself, the Issa, the criminal act, the Etzem, and then there's something called Avizrayim, which is the broader. I'll give you another example. Let's take in Lashon Hara. You have something called Avak Lashon Hara. That's like Avizrayim de Lashon Hara. It means I didn't say anything terrible about the person. I rather, you know, I was trying to be complimentary, but, you know, from my compliments, like, for example, if you want to compliment the chassan to his shver, and you tell the father-in-law, the new father-in-law, that he's been steiging away yom v'layla for years, and then you add your following clause, he's mischazek from one day to the other. So you begin to understand that, you know, like maybe he was coming from zero, you know what I mean? To that, here in this country they call them mischazkim, you know. Anyway, that could be a shmek of Lashon Hara. Call it Avak Lashon Hara, Avizrayim de Lashon Hara. So the thesis of Rav Rudiman is that the Torah uses the term Ritzicha because it's Avizrayim de Avodah Zarah. It has a shmek of Avodah Zarah. Of Ritzicha, excuse me. Right? It says a shmek of Ritzicha. Or, for example, in the case of Niuf, which means adultery literally, it has a shmek of adultery. Well, why was David HaMelech having a relationship with Bathsheba based on a get that Uriah gave to her, and the get is Chalom Afreya, if he doesn't come back from the Melchama? That's already Avizrayim the Niuf. So Rav Rudiman says that whenever you see this language in the Gemara and Shabbos of Ki'ilu, you know, Eino El Toa, that if you're saying Zechote is Eino El Toa, because you don't understand the language issue here. The language issue is that the Torah uses terminologies that can be understood in all generations. So therefore, the words Ritzicha might include, and Niyuf might include Avizrayu Ritzicha and Avizrayu Avizrayu Devodizora or Niyuf Gilarayus. But it's not the act itself. It's not the original Avera, the full fledged primary Avera. Yeah, you.
So why would
speak a drop louder so that the other can hear? Because yeah, okay, it might be your house, but you're a little bit far away from your house.
Why would the Torah then give certain cases, certain terminology that can really be mistaken by those that are outside of the privia?
Right. So that's already Rashi and Chumash in Parshas Bereishis answers your question, and Rashi says that if the Torah has a definite point that it has to get across, the Torah is not concerned with the kofer. In other words, ethics is critical, is primary, and the Torah is going to formulate its verses, its sentences in terms of that goal, that ethical goal. For example, Nasa Adam, Rashi says, how could Hashem, this is all based on Chazal, how could Hashem write Nasa Adam, which sounds like there's more than one God, Chas V'Shalom, right? And the Torah, you know, he's not oriented and hadn't understood the Torah, he's going to think Nasa Adam. And really, in truth, Chazal say Nasa Adam is God addressing himself to the angels, but there's an ethical message over here, right? That the CEO should call in his advisors, even though at the end he's the boss and he's the giant and he's going to make the decisions on his own, but call them in. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu consults with the angels. The Torah, right? This individual who misinterprets the Torah is going to say, your Torah itself proves that there's more than one God. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I couldn't care less. And here there's a very ethical principle. What's the ethical principle here? Chazal want to teach us, and this is the main point of today's discussion, that what would be considered a sin, an egregious sin, for the Rishonim, would not be considered such a sin for the Achronim. And that's based on the famous principle of HaKadosh Baruch Hu medadekim atzadikim kechut hasayro, that the standards and the demands for tzaddik are unbelievable. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so meticulous. And that which you might think, for example, the case of Bnei Eli, what they did was they were mashe korban oseihem, and they forced the women folk to, you know, who brought a korban yoledes, you know, then the Mishkan was in Shiloh, and to make them sleep overnight, they separated these wives from their husbands. And that's called niyuf. That's called Avizrayu de niyuf. Why? You know, if you or I would do such a thing, I don't know. Maybe we'd get a patch for it, but it's not a nice thing to do. But you wouldn't call it niyuf. For David HaMelech to have a relationship with Elisheva, with Bathsheba, when Bathsheba had already received the get, again, the Tanai wasn't yet fulfilled, that's called niyuf. Why? Because even though for you and I, from the perspective of the Doros Achron, so this ethical message that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is medadikim etzadikim kechut asayra, which the Gemara derives from Pesukim in Tanakh, it's a principle, is so critical on an ethical level that I don't care about the person who's going to misinterpret. Let him go to those. I turned it off, don't worry. And you're going to, you know, reinterpret Tanakh, and there's a whole school of you know, here in outside Yerushalayim of people who do this, a whole machon, you know, that basically to reinterpret Tanakh based on Pshuto Shel Mikra, based on, you know, the literary tools and without mentioning Chazal, you know, who cares about Chazal? You know, I'm going to come to the exact opposite conclusion. I think I told you gentlemen once that we invited someone to give a lecture in our yeshiva, back in Mavasser. He was a guest lecturer. And again, he's a frumi yid, I'm not saying no. But we made a mistake in one thing. We forgot where he studied Tanakh. And basically, Hagar was the heroine. And sorrow was the mershas. You know what I'm saying? And this is what happens when you apply literary criticism to the Torah. And who knows what conclusions they will derive for such a thing. You know, Avraham Avinu was Makayim Kol HaTorah Kula. before it was given. That's Chazal. Don't take that seriously. Abraham walked around in the robes and in the sandals, you know, in the dunes of the desert. He didn't know anything about the Torah. I can tell you, Rabosai, that the Rishonim, and before them the Amoraim, and even Tanaim, built everything that they understood about the Avos on this principle. The Rabbi Yaakov Rosnas, who's the author of the Mishnah of Melech, and the Rav called him one of the three Sephardic giants who understood Lundus, and they wore a turban. And the Mishnah of Melech dedicated an entire book to try to understand all of Avram's actions in the light of this principle that Kiyem Kolator Kulakon Shenitla. So don't tell me that you're going to exclude Chazal, because it's going to come to a very difficult situation over here. In any event, that's Rav Rudavi. Now, in addition to that, you have here a very great essay from Rav Aaron Kotler, and another one from Rav Dessler, and another one from Rav Breuder. I would like to focus in the little bit amount of time that we have today on the Chiddush of Rav Breuder. This is Song Derech, pages number 9 and 10. And he goes back to the Parsha of the Misonanim. And again, he's utilizing some of the concepts that we mentioned before. I forgot to mention, by the way, what's the pasuk and the source, the Gemara Yevamos on page 2 for HaKadosh Baruch Hu Medagdikim im Atzadikim Kichur HaSaira. It's a pasuk in Tehillim. It says Usvivav Nisara Ma'od. So that's one principle that goes into this equation. And then the second principle that we mentioned in the name of Rav Rudiman, called Avizrayu, that the language has to be a language that can be understood in every context and in every generation. And then we have the approach of Rav Nevensal that we mentioned earlier, that every pasuk has to be seen in its context, behek sheron. And you can't come to any conclusions by reading one pasuk and taking it out of a, you know, out of a context of an entire sugya. The language of Rav Nevensal, which again is on page 11, we're interested now in pages 9 and 10, but I just want to quote Rav Nevensal. He says, "In ima ba umisaperes shebna yodea ledaber." So a mother comes along and she tells you that my son knows how to speak. So, you know, you might come to the conclusion, wow, this kid is 2 years old and he's precocious, and already at the age of 2, he begins speaking. That's what she had in mind. But then you begin to see in context that she tells you where her son spoke and on what occasion he gave the something address. What's it called? The keynote address, right? So now you begin to understand that when she says her son Yodel Ledaber, it doesn't mean that he's 2 and a half and he knows how to speak, but she means he's 30 and he's a great speaker. He's an orator. And again, the point is that we misunderstand words because we take them literally without seeing what they might mean. And we have different principles of how to interpret the Tanakh of Divrei Torah Kolashim Bnei Adam. I, the Pshuto Shel Mikra, yeah, the Pshuto Shel Mikra is correct also. David HaMelech is guilty of a crime, but not of a crime of having a relationship with a married woman. Yeah, the Bnei Eli are guilty of a crime, and Reuven is guilty of a crime. But don't for one minute assume that he's guilty of the most immoral act of Niuv, and he had a relationship with Bilhah. That's not what it means. Reuven is one of the Shiftei Kah. Again, we have no clue what that means, Shiftei Kah, because we live in the Doris HaChronim. And therefore, says Rav Nevensal, get a posuk shemidaber b'tzadikim, where the posuk is describing the greats, chayovim lomar she'ein kavanas hamilin kipshuton. Take a word and understand its deeper meaning, not its superficial meaning. And even though the posuk uses those words, and it would seem to indicate a certain conclusion, as if the Torah was describing the activities of Rishon Gemurim, who were totally guilty and had no moral sense or compass whatsoever, he says, "Ein hakavana l'kaf." That's not what the Torah means. The Torah is not telling you that these greats were the lowest of the low, violating some despicable low kind of immoral act, but rather the Torah uses the phrase, and now you have to understand the phrase and see it in its context. And we're going to take that same phrase in one context, and it means one thing, and it might be mean the opposite in a different context. Just like this woman who speaks about her son who knows how to speak, well, it depends on what context you're talking about. Does he know how to speak because he's a young child and he's precocious, or he knows how to speak because he has a great koach hadibur? So that's the thesis of Rav Nevenzahl, and I think the one who develops this further is Rav Aaron Kotler, the Rosh Hashiva back in Europe, Kletsk. That's what my Rebbe used to always, whenever he got together with Rav Aaron Kotler, he would always call him the Kletzka Rosh Hashiva, even though he's Rosh Hashiva of Lakewood. I guess Kletsk was more impressive than Lakewood at that time. I don't know how many students there were in Lakewood at that time. Probably less than 70. I myself, well, one of them is gone, but I knew a few people who were in the original group back in Lakewood. And it wasn't, you know, what today, I don't know, what are they up to, 5,000, 10,000? I don't know, that nobody knows the numbers over there. They don't publish them. By the way, did I tell you my story about this Shifty organization? It's wild. I was in Toronto, and I was trying to figure out if there's anywhere online something that would be as good as olamot.net, and I could just send you Mara Makomas from online without having to stand there and scan and piece together. So somebody tells me, oh no, this was in New York, not in Toronto. So somebody tells me, his name is Rav Reichman, he's a Rav in East Hill, which is the shul, the newest shul in Englewood, New Jersey, and he tells me that he heard from a friend of his that Lakewood has something online. So again, with the whole Ishtalshalus, they got me an email address of someone in Lakewood who's in charge of putting great material online. Did I told you the story?
No.
No? Anyway, I'm emailing back and forth from New York to Lakewood to some rabbi, and he's telling me how I get access to the material, and some of it I could buy if they publish it in you know. And I'm getting really excited about it. Then I notice on his email address the name Coleman. His name is Rav Avram Coleman. So I say to him, by any chance you have any relatives in Toronto? And this is like the 15th email. He says, yeah, my father lives in Toronto. I said to him, is his Hebrew name Yechiel? He says, that's my father. So it's like really weird, you know what I'm saying? So that's my latest connection to Lakewood, and I was in Lakewood for a chasana not long ago, as you might know, and I decided to visit Rabbi Coleman, and he showed me the whole operation. It's called Shifty. You can get it online, and since then I became a Shifty freak. You know, so you might get Myron McComas from Shifty, from Lakewood Yeshiva. Anyway, so Rabbi Coleman was the Rashiva of Kletsk back in Europe. And he had a very close relationship with Rabbi Zalman Meltzer. And he writes that the Rambam at the end of Hilchas Me'ilah writes that, and you'll see this on page 4, Asur li'odam lachshov u'lizbonein b'mishpatei HaTorah kedoshi kimachshavto b'shar divrei achol. The Rambam has a new definition of Me'ilah. And what's Me'ilah? Me'ilah is when you think about Kodesh, when you think about Mishpatei HaTorah Kedosha in the same way that you would think about Divrei Chol. Meaning if you apply the same rules that apply to poetry and to Shakespeare and other literature, and you apply that to the Torah, the Rambam calls that Me'ilah. Yesh bo zeh mishum Me'ilah b'kedushas HaTorah. And he writes, HaTorah HaElokit, the Divine Torah, says Rav Aaron, he rechava midei eretz amukah min hayam. It's so broad, it's so deep. V'im adam nigash l'torah b'kli sichlo, if he uses his own limited intellectual tools, and marichadi, and he evaluates everything with midas hatzagoso, which is close to nothing, then he lowers the Torah, the level of the Torah, to the madreg of his own imbecilic, you know, level of seicho. That's what it means to be Moel Bekodesh, as the Rambam would say. And therefore you cannot evaluate the Torah based on your puny understanding, But you have to understand that every single word in the Torah and every single letter in the Torah is there for a purpose. And the Lashon HaTorah is not, he says, Lashon HaRegila. The language in the Torah is not your normal language. You know, we have a problem here because, you know, you ask an Israeli, what does the word get mean? So he'll tell you it means a shtar. Yeah, because he's not sensitive to the language. There's a world of difference between a shtar and a get in many halachic fundamental principles. But we speak a Hebrew language over here, and get, the word get became, I don't mean the taxi get, but the word get, gimel tet, became part of the language, the colloquial language here in Israel. So right away you assume it means whatever it means in our society in a secular, low down way. That's called me'ilah. We don't understand that the words of the Torah have to be understood on a much deeper level from a perspective of Chazal, and that's where Chazal are going to be our eyes to get the proper, profound perspective and grasp on the words of the Torah. They're going to teach us what the words mean.
Talking about Rav
Breida. We're going to
speak about Rav
Breida. Rav Breida. So Rav Breida on page 9 starts with the parsha of the Misonanim. And you know that the Misonanim were complainers and squawkers, Miachilenu Basar, and so forth and so on. And Moshe Rabbeinu gets very angry. So Rashi says in his commentary on the Torah that Ein Ha'am El Rishoyim. And if you take Rashi at a simple level, it sounds like, you know, we're talking about real Rishayim. Again, we usually reserve the word Rasha for someone who deserves that term. You know, he's a real, really bad guy. He says the following. How could they be Rishayim? I mean, this was the door about which Chazal say that Rasha Shivcha Layam Mashalo Ra Yechezkel Ben Buzi. This is called the door Deah in Chazal. The Rambam writes, and we spoke about it at great length, and this is in Parshas Chukas, you know, when we speak about the chait of the hitting the stone, and the Rambam has a unique shita that Moshe Rabbeinu was guilty because he called them morim, that was the word he used to describe Klal Yisrael, and the Rambam goes on to elaborate in a very dramatic way that he was using the word morim as an attack against people who were so great, because they were the Dor Deah. They lived a miraculous existence for 40 years studying the Torah, and the Rambam treated them like morim, and therefore the Yalkut says, Vayehi ha'am kim misonanim, says the Yalkut, lo chatu chet gomor. It wasn't even a complete chet. And the Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Breida, goes on to describe that the Misonanim were really afraid of situations that Alpi Derech HaTeva were worthy of being afraid of. You know, they had a cause, they had a case. But yet we call them Rishoyim. How can Rashi call them Rishoyim? And the Medrash says, Lo Chatu Chet Gomor. If it wasn't a Chet Gomor, then you're not a Rasha. So what does this mean, a Chet that's a Chet Sheino Gomor? And he says the following. He says, Lefi dargasam, according to their greatness, the level of their greatness, that's called a chait. It's not a chait gomer because it's only relative to them and their greatness. Relative to us, it would not qualify as a chait. And it means that, again, you see the word Rasha, but you have to take it in its context. Rasha relative to their greatness and what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to expect of them and demand of them. So even though it's not a chet gomor, but nevertheless we can use very harsh language, because instead of complaining, they should have relied on the faith of a miraculous existence and not get so involved in tivus and desiring of meat and whatever meat symbolizes and all of that. Then you'll see in the next section he writes, and this is on page 10, I believe, he writes that there are many parshas in the Torah where the Torah goes back to the Shoresh and tells you why they failed or why they fall short, and the Torah describes the shoresh ha-chet, not the chet itself. And so, for example, in the case of Parshas Nitzavim and other parshios, when you talk about people who got caught up in hedonistic pleasure and desires, it's called Poreh Rosh Vilana in the Torah's language. And that sounds like the most rotten sins that you can imagine. But that's the shorish. That's as far as the shorish achet is. In the second paragraph on page 10, he writes, Kach gadol koach ha-taiva v'ashpa'asa. If you don't control your desire for lust and pleasures, it's going to get out of hand. And then it's going to end up with the asafsuf asher holech bekirbi. And Vayeshu Vayivku Gavre Yisrael. So again, all this is because sometimes the Torah describes the shoresh of the chet, not the chet itself. And Kasher Mitchilas Atavol is Orer Eimla Matzor. He says when this shoresh of taiva, the desire for pleasure, gets started, it's Lizorer, then Eimla Matzor, there's no way of controlling it. It gets out of hand. And that's why the Torah uses such very harsh language to teach us and warn us about the ethical issues and Musar and how we have to avoid something that Beshoresh is evil and it's rotten and who knows where it's going to lead at the end of the day. Then he gets to the parsha of Nadav Avihu and Esh Zara. They're also, you think, what did they do? They did an idolatrous act or something, an Esh Zara, some sort of alien Esh. And that's not true. That's not what the Torah had in mind. And then, in the next paragraph, which starts on the left side, he says, Yesh lefanenu shnei chaton shetotza osam nitvas v'yoser hisgalus hashchina. We said Milmad Golo Malosam Vidargosam Amufla. He says that sometimes, paradoxically, as a result of the sin, there's an intense relationship with the Shekhinah is the ultimate result. That's only possible if you realize that their sin was a low echelon sin that became a catalyst for Ashras HaShekhinah, for a closer relationship to Shekhinah. And this is what he goes through, Keseder, going through the parashios. So, for example, the parashas Peshalach, when the people complained and they said, "Mi yiten musenu bi'ad Hashem bi'eretz Mitzrayim," and they start comparing Mitzrayim to the Sir Abbasar, and we should have died in Mitzrayim and not here in the Midbar. He says the following, Al Yidei Tlunos Elu, as a result of these complaints, Zachu is Galos Kvod Hashem Yisparach. He quotes a pasuk in this parasha of Beshalach that says that as a result of the sin, there was a greater revelation of the Shekhinah. Bahi Kidvar Aaron El Kol Adas. Hadas b'nei Yisrael, vayifnu el amidbar, vehine kvod Hashem nira b'yanan. And again, he goes through one sin after the other in Tanakh, and he tries to show you, like for example, the chait of the Meraglim, that we're not talking about a sin on such a terrible level. It's relative. And it has to be seen in a certain context. Or in Parshas Korach, you get the impression that the rebellion of Korach is pure evil, and that for sure it was, but yet look what it led to, because at the end of the Parsha of Korach it says, Vayi Bakel Ha'eda Al Moshe V'Aaron Vayifnu El Oe Moed V'hine Kiso Ha'onan Vayar Kvod Hashem. Very interesting. In the aftermath of Korach, Vayar Kvod Hashem. That seems paradoxical. And the Ramban is famous for saying that in the aftermath of Chet Mei Meriva Kasher, Yisloninu Chinom Yishpoch Aleim Chamas Apo B'kach Od Remez L'Ketzef HaGodol V'Chiv Magefo Shedemar Vayar Kvoda Vayera Hashem Kvoda Hashem Elokim Alehem She Rama Remez or Ramaz El Hakahal Ha Nizkar. So this is a remez of to the Bnei Korah, to the Adas Korah. Vumare Yad Hashem Ahove B'Magefos. And it's going to be a Magefa, but Hashem is going to save us from that Magefa. And that itself is something that indicates that there has to be this kind of hisgalus as an aftermath of the sin. And again, he's going to claim that the sin has to be seen in context. And then when you say about Avraham Avinu in the Brisbane of Besorim, and he asks for an oath, he asks for a siman ledavar, is Hayimaharach Amidas Hadin. Maybe Avraham Avinu had doubts. And so too in the case of Yitzchak, who preferred and loved Esau. You know, what kind of a chait is that? So in order to close the shiur, because I see it's getting late, I just want to say this. The classical approach to why Yitzchak loved Esau in Chazal is not a guilt trip on Yitzchak. That's not what it's all about. And the one who develops this beautifully, all based on Midrashi Chazal, is Rav Chaim Yaakov Goldwicht. Zichron Levracha. If that name means anything to you, the founding Rosh Hashiva of Kerem Yavne, where I had the schus of learning back in the day, and he was my Rosh Hashiva. He wrote many works on Medrash and on Agadita. Again, he didn't write it, but it was written based on his lectures, and that's called Asufas Ma'arachos. And in his presentation to these parshios, starting from Chayisara and going through Toldos and all the other parshios of Esav and Yaakov, he claims that in the original divine scheme of things, the plan was that Esav would play a major role in the legacy in the Mesoras HaTorah. Yaakov would play also a major role, but Yaakov's role would be what he calls Avodas Pnim, you know, Tefillah and Torah, whereas Esav was meant to be Basad. It says Vayitzei Lasuach Vayitzod Menasad. Esav is the Ish Sadeh. What does the Ish Sadeh represent? He's going to take the Gashmius and elevated to Ruchnis, like in the case of Kibbur Av Ha'Em. And according to the thesis of Yitzhak Avinu, the most critical need for a bracha was dafka for the Avodas Chutz. The Avodas Pnim doesn't need a bracha. They're in Lakewood, they're learning away in the Beis Medrash. What do they need, some sort of a special protection and a bracha? No, it was Dafka Esav who needed that bracha desperately, because his job was a major job of Avodas Chutz. He would organize, you know, all the physical or financial needs of man, and in that context, he would need a bracha because he's out there as an Ish Sadeh. But again, this is a lecture unto itself, and I'm really botching it up. It's got to be fleshed out logically, and you have to see all the sources. But my point only is, and with this I'll conclude, that in the parsha of Yitzhak and Esav, there's a lot more going on here than what we think on a superficial level. And my whole purpose today in trying to justify this principle called, you know, Eino Ela Torah, you know, if you accuse so-and-so of being a chote, my point is to see the Torah in its broader context, and Chazal will guide us through that. And to read the parsha of Yitzhak and Esav and think, oh yeah, Yitzhak loved Esav because he was a hunter and he